Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is Floyd Woodrow. How are you today, Floyd?
Miro, I'm wonderful today, thank you.
It's great to have you here in the podcast, and thank you so much for taking the time. And of course, for our listeners, Floyd is a former major in the Special Air Service, the SAS, and he was one of the UK's youngest soldiers to be selected for that very prestigious part of our armed forces. And he currently consults to a range of corporate and sporting clients across the globe. And he is also an author. And once again, thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast, Floyd. And my first question is the one I ask any author that comes on the podcast, and that is, what actually inspired you to begin writing?
I've always enjoyed storytelling. I have just finished a novel which has been in the mix for probably about 3 years. It's a science fiction novel, but one of my other loves is leadership, and so I was inspired to sit down and put my thoughts on to paper what I thought made great leaders, and I've developed a number of different concepts as a result of that. And I think what it enables you to do is, by spending time thinking, doing the research, developing your ideas, it just helps hone them. So that's been the biggest driver, I think, for why I want to be an author, certainly from a leadership perspective.
Great. And you are now the author of two books, if I'm not mistaken. Can you tell us a bit about them, and what were you...
Sure. I've actually now done three, Miro. The first one was called Elite, which is the secret to exceptional leadership and performance. And that was just about looking at the first concepts I had about coming from the military, first of all, working in business and sports teams, and putting down my thoughts on paper, trying to capture what I thought was the essence of the things that I'd learnt, which led me nicely into The Warrior, the Strategist, and You, which was about really honing that particular concept. And I know you use a metaphor of having a compass. Compass is about four key cardinals: super north star, the north pointer, tells you where you're going; south cardinals being a strategist; east cardinals, your ethos; and the west cardinals being warrior. And by warrior, I mean strength of character. So it was about developing that concept. And that has enabled me to take the same concept that I've used with working with ambassadors and some of the top sports institutions alongside the top businesses into schools. And my love at the moment is working in primary and secondary schools using exactly the same concept that I use in business to work with children, so that they can raise their aspirations, they have dreams, and more importantly, they can set about putting them into practice.
Great, that's very inspiring. And I would like to go back and actually focus on your background a bit, because you were selected to join SAS at a very young age of 22. How did you accomplish such a feat, and what was the mindset behind the opportunity?
First of all, you don't get selected for it. You have to want to be on the course, so you have to put yourself forward. The key driver was I'd wanted to do this since I was a small child. 12, 13, I wanted to join the parachute regiment, first of all, to see if I could test myself mentally and physically. And then I had an aspiration to join the Special Air Service when I was about 22, 23, or around that particular age. It was about being the best soldier I could be. I was being very fortunate. I've worked with some super talented individuals who gave me some great skill sets. And so the mentality was about ensuring that you were focused, determined, and you learned as many skills as you could possibly learn. I wasn't the fittest or the strongest or the most experienced at 22, that's for sure. The average age of passing is about 28 and 29. So for me, it was about having a vertical learning curve, but just staying on the course, learning, developing skill sets, and then hopefully being seen as somebody that had potential. And I think that was one of the great things about this program. It's a great talent identification program, because it's not just looking for those that are the most talented, it's looking for those that have the potential to be talented in the future. And that is why I passed. Some great instructors who were very, very tough, but very, very fair, and enabled me then to go on to have a 23-year career in the Special Air Service.
Great, that's great stuff. And actually, before we move on, there's something there that you mentioned which I found very fascinating, and that's the fact that they were able to identify strengths and build up on potential. Do you think that's something the business world or the corporate world can definitely learn, in terms of harnessing people's potential and making sure that they live up to the best of their ability?
I personally think it's the most important element of any CEO's job, is the legacy that they intend to leave behind. And your talent is the lifeblood of any organization. Do I think it's done well? Now, having been on programs within a business, sports, a government, the military, it's something we don't do as well as we could do. We forget. We talk about it, and I come across businesses that will tell me their succession planners is in train. They've got lots of great candidates, but when I ask them what they're doing, what processes they're going to close the gap in leadership, I usually find they struggle to tell me. And it's the first program that tends to get cut when times are difficult, and certainly we're going through some difficult times now. But are we preparing ourselves for the future? I don't always see businesses doing it as well as they could.
How have you actually applied your knowledge from what are the world's toughest environments in a lot of cases to the corporate as business world as you transitioned?
Well, I've been really fortunate. I think it's about learning simple skill sets, and they don't change. It will always come back down to clarity of vision. So making sure that you are determined, you have the ability to understand what is it that you're trying to achieve. In the Special Air Service, we empower. So we don't rely on the fact that it's just a small group of people. We ensure that everybody's a leader. Therefore, they can seize opportunities. So what I have learned, and I actually run two companies as well. So I run a foreign exchange a company and I run a cybersecurity company. What I've learned is to take the key aspects of having the right set of values, having the right mission statement, the right purpose, being clear on the plans but having contingencies, selecting the right people to make sure you're surrounded by them. And then that has helped me enormously in business. And although, you know, we come, as you quite rightly pointed out, some tough environments. Business is tough, and we're going through times that are technologically changing dramatically. From an environmental perspective, a political perspective, a business perspective, you have to be adept at navigating difficult circumstances. And I think the key is to make sure that you're responsive and responsible for your thoughts. You know, we are not on sat nav in the military. You have to make decisions, and I think that's really important that you are clear on the course that you're taking.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you mentioned, it reminded me of a great story of a conversation I had recently with a gentleman who worked in the banking sector. And his message was very in line with what you said, because their issue was actually the technology itself, as you mentioned, because it kept changing. They were relying on very old, very ancient way of doing things. But simply due to the nature of a sector like banking, they couldn't simply turn off something, update it, get it back working. So they had to really struggle and make sure that they actually have the right mindset and the right skills to actually just be able to get this thing going and keep it moving.
And I think that's important, the growth mindset. And it's one of those classic buzzwords of the last year or 2 years, I think, having a growth mindset. But it's true. It's being able to look at where we're going to be in 5 to 10 years and making sure that you're able to adapt your business to deal with that particular situation. More importantly, not just the business in terms of technology, but the people to understand how to use that technology without losing sight of some basic things that still need to be in place. So you still need people. You still need to make sure that you have empathy and sensitivity for how they behave and how you behave with them. I think that's exceptionally important in today's age.
In today's business world, leaders have a job to motivate their teams, but at the same time, they help them improve in the face of the more negative aspects of work, such as anxiety and fear. How can they do that effectively?
Again, for me, this is fundamentally having really good training policies in place, but it's about giving clarity of direction. When I know that the leader is clear on where they're going, they are inspirational, they are supportive but challenging, they provide the right culture or the right role model to deliver the culture, it helps all of the individuals beneath them. But they can't do it by themselves. It's absolutely vital that the leader grows leaders around them that are constantly there to support and develop other individuals. If you take it that a business is developing the lowest individual that has just arrived right the way through to the highest individuals, then it's usually a place you want to come and work for, because I'm growing as an individual. And I think the things that I've seen at the highest levels is when people come to work because it's a great place to be. I get energy. I get chance to develop. If I make a mistake, it's not held against me. It's used as a learning tool. But we're also winning. And the key element of this is that we have a brand that's successful so that people want to sell the brand. By having those things in place, you will mitigate stress and anxiety. Stress and anxiety usually comes about because you're scared. You're in a place where you feel vulnerable. If you can mitigate those elements, then generally you can mitigate those two areas. And alongside that, if you're developing resilience techniques so that you're putting people in the right situations to learn, to be put under pressure, to be tested, but it's done in a safe way, what that then does, it gives an individual capabilities that no matter where they then go further down the line, is they've already been through this. So if I have to do this for real, I've got all the capabilities, the skill sets to produce the right performance. And that's just about skills, development of those skills, enabling people to grow, putting them under pressure, and then you'll see how people develop in the long term.
Yeah, and they can absolutely go forward with that, with the idea of transferable skills, something that you can simply put in any part of your life.
And that to me comes back to when I often talk about having a compass for life. All the skills that I've learned from being a small child, when I learned to do all sports, every skill I've learned when I studied law, even though I didn't go on to become a PE teacher or a barrister, the skill sets that I've learned have been transferable in every other area, whether I've worked with sports teams or businesses, or indeed the government, and they continue to do that. So for me, life's a journey. All the things that I learn as a leader or in business, as an individual, just make me the better version of myself. That's surely how you're going to be defined, on people viewing you, on what are your characteristics and behaviors that you exhibit, not only when the day's great, but when things are difficult. That's probably one of the key elements of life, isn't it? Is that all the things we're talking about, the skills and capabilities, enable you to fulfill your potential in whatever direction that is.
Yeah, and actually, before we move on, there's some great insight there, and I'd like to touch a bit on the idea of micromanagement, because the autonomous capabilities of people as they develop can sometimes make managers feel perhaps a bit uneasy, and they might be thinking, well, you know, if they are so capable, well, why am I here? And I've often seen this in business where managers will often take a very micromanagerial position within their teams, and it ends up being to the negative. It doesn't actually help. Why do you think that happens, and how can managers stop themselves from doing it?
Again, it's a growth mindset. Unfortunately, sometimes if we're not developed, and to be a micromanager, there are times, as with anything, it's part of a leader's toolkit, having to manage down, making sure you've got the detail. Every leader does need to have that as part of their toolkit, but it will not help the development of individuals further down the line. When you're looking at being transformational, that is then the opposite, because you've got the things in place, you've got the procedures, the processes, the structures in place. What you then need to do is make sure that you can seize opportunity. To do that, you've got to be entrepreneurial. You've got to have a growth mindset where you're allowing individuals then to do things that support the development of yourself, the team, the organization. And as you go further down the line, you won't have all the skill sets. One of the great things about the military is that we rely on whoever is the most skilled, they get to lead. Why would you not have that as just a given? The best person lead. It doesn't mean you've abdicated leadership responsibility. I run a foreign exchange company where I'm not the most skillful in any of these areas. All of the individuals that I have around me are more skillful than I am. But ultimately, I have to make the final decision. So I rely on selecting the best people around me to be successful. And that is, again, as I think about having the confidence in the individuals around you, and the fact that ultimately I still have to make the final decision on where we go as a team, because I'm the leader of this particular group. But I realize that the best thing to do in an area where it's highly skilled, highly technical, then you need people that are capable of doing it. And that's where you build trust, rapport, and having confidence in your team that you're successful together. I cannot be successful without this team working at the highest levels. So why would I not allow them to do what they're really, really good at? And that then comes down to, again, giving them ownership, empowering them. But of course, if something needs to be done further down the line, I will take responsibility for that. So I think it's just about having that confidence to realize you cannot get to the highest levels of performance without being able to trust and allow people to be empowered to do their job. Otherwise, you'll just be too slow. And in an age where speed is going to be essential in a lot of things, you require to let things go, be free, enable people to become leaders themselves and trust them. Otherwise, you've got the wrong person. You've hired the wrong person. They are the wrong persons to be in your business. Then remove them.
Great. And for our listeners, can you perhaps give us three tips on how they can live up to their maximum potential at their workplace. What can we do as we sit down on our desk and say, okay, let's have a good new year?
First thing is never grow up. It would be simply that don't ever think that you stopped learning. So look at where you want to maximize your potential from a personal perspective, things that can enable you to grow as an individual, and then from a team perspective, how do you want to push your organization? And that is about having super North Stars, really clear, unambiguous statements of intent that take you forward. The second thing that I think is really, really important is you need to be surrounded by people that are supportive and challenging, that enable you to grow, but also quick to point out where you could enhance your potential, your performance, but with a view of making sure that they are positive and they are driving you forward. The final thing is about well-being. It's about making sure that you look after yourself, and the Dalai Lama calls it wise selfishness. That is about taking time out to make sure you have energy, you have the right nutrition, the right sleep, all the things that we know are going to enhance our capabilities. But for a long journey, you have got to be in a good place. You've got to recharge. And Christmas for me is about having a base camp. It's where I can just reflect. I can make sure that I look at the strategies that I've used that I may need to change. It's about making sure I've got the right team, clarity on what I need to do any rehearsals that I need, and then start on that new journey by stepping forth with absolute passion.
Yeah, absolutely. And the point that you've raised about our physical well-being is actually very important, because from what I have read and what I've researched, I find that when it comes to decision making, if you are influenced by hunger, sleep depravity, you know, lack of energy, it was an astoundingly high number of a probability that you will make the wrong decision simply by the merit of you not having the right mindset and not the right physical well-being to actually look at something objectively and make the right decision.
I totally agree. I mean, physicality is one of the key aspects of performance, and the mind-body is not separated. But with the body, I think if you train at a really high level, and even if it's not where you're an athlete, you've just got well-being, just having well-being, going for a walk, making sure that you are active will always help you make the appropriate decisions, especially when you're under pressure. As you said, any of the other elements is just taking a percentage away of your optimal performance. And so why would we not just enhance that by doing some simple things? And all I would ever ask is that if you sleep well, if you have the right nutrition, if you make sure that you have some simple things that enable you to be healthy, you'll be in a great place. For me, one of the most important things, and why I talk about wise selfishness, is that everything I've ever seen at the extreme elements and even to some of the mundane things, those people that are able to have the energy, they've looked after themselves. And by well-being, I mean they go for walks, they have the right nutrition, they get the right sleep patterns, they have an advantage over their colleagues. If you then take that to another level where you are doing a training program, you are making sure that you are having the right amount of energy, you then give more back to the other people around you. And you may think that there are lots of other people that are more important than you, and I totally agree with that. But if you have a basis where you are in a great place, you automatically give more time to friends, to family, to colleagues, because all of a sudden you're making the right decisions. And that comes down to having the right physicality. With that, that gives you an edge. If you've then got the intellect, the wisdom, the empathy on top of that, you'll have a great life.
Great. Very insightful advice there. And just to add on a tiny bit, try and be creative. I mean, if you have a boring meeting scheduled up, why don't you just go for a walk with your team members and see how the fresh air can actually give you a new insight on that pesky project you might be up to. But the last question is the one I ask anyone on the podcast, Floyd, and that is, what are you currently reading?
The book that I've got at the moment is called The Better Angels of Our Nature by Steven Pinker, and it's about looking at how society has changed dramatically over the centuries, and where we're living in a society that is less hostile than what we used to. But it's a great analytical book, and it's definitely a read for next year.
Great. And of course, for our audience, if that sounds interesting, we will put a link in the description below where you can go and you can find out more about that book. But with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today, Floyd. It's been a pleasure.
Miro, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And of course, for our listeners, if you enjoyed our conversation today, there will be links in the description below where you can find out more about what Lloyd is up to and, of course, his books. And if you would like to know more about the themes and discussions of today, he will be at the World Class Leadership 2018 conference. And there will be links in the description below where you can go. You can find out more about the event and, of course, purchase your ticket. Once again, we very much look forward to seeing you next week on the podcast. And once again, you can find us on our social media at Lit Radio. And we look forward to seeing you next week.